The Jericho Network on Westwood One. All right, today's the day. Avenged Sevenfold's M Shadows returns to talk as Jericho to make a huge announcement. An announcement so big, he could only do it right here. That's right. He is going to reveal the new drummer for Avenged Sevenfold. Who do you think it is? Many names have been bandied. Is that a word? Bandied back and forth online over the last few days, over the last few weeks. Who is the new drummer for Avenged Sevenfold? We're going to find out right here exclusively on Talk Is Jericho. Shadows brought the new member here. He's going to reveal it. So much stuff we're going to talk about today.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, so we're here in the home of M Shadows, somewhere in California, and it's the best thing. I pull up to your house, and it's so SoCal. There's a guy on a skateboard holding a surfboard.
Yes, that's pretty much what I live.
How awesome is that? I was like, that is the perfect example of a California.
We have
dude
a good time
right
out here.
Yeah, and we're going to have a good time today because we're actually announcing first time ever the announcement of Avenged Sevenfold's new drummer, and I think we should just get right to it. It's Ricky Rocket. No, Matt,
talk dirty to me.
Yeah. Do you recognize that voice? Who's the voice?
Yes, Mr. Brooks Wackerman.
Now,
right about now, everyone will be pausing their podcast, and they're going to get either on Google if they don't know him, or they're going to go straight to his videos.
Yeah.
I'm sure the opinions are going to start right away. But
we should have talked for an hour and then announced it at the end and made people listen all the way through because they heard the name now and they're just going to stop listening.
Yeah. We should
the
just end. Talk to him the whole time. Just,
yeah, exactly.
No clue.
But the thing is, Brooks Wackerman, and you told me this a few weeks ago or whatever it was, and Brooks, you're here. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And your pedigree is ridiculous as far as all the different bands that you've played with over the years. And in my opinion, as soon as I heard that name, and I got to be honest, I told Rich Ward from Fozzy as well, and he was flipping out. Dude, that's the perfect guy for the job. You have an amazing career resume.
I appreciate that.
And here you are in Avenged Sevenfold.
Yeah, I'm thrilled. I mean, I've been a fan of the band for a decade, and when Matt gave me the call last year, I was just absolutely thrilled. So
now, have you guys been friends for a while, long-time friends?
It's been like a part of the community where we've seen each other out. I think we've seen you at Mahi's before and done some things, but Jimmy and you were friends.
Yeah, I knew Jimmy.
Right, Rev, yeah.
But, I mean, the first time I was introduced to Brooks's playing from Jimmy, an Infectious Grooves album that he did.
Yeah.
And it was, that was a crazy band, and it was one of our favorite drumming albums and bass albums. You know, Robert Trujillo plays on that.
And, which album was it?
Groove Family Groove Psycho.
Groove Family Psycho, yeah.
And so when we actually found out that Brooks had joined Bad Religion, we were on Warped Tour at the time. And we're like, oh, dude, like, we're going to get to watch Brooks every day. And we did. We stood on stage, like all the punk rock shows. You look at any of those Warped Tour videos, there's like more people on stage than
in the crowd.
In the crowd. Yeah. And we would sit there and watch Brooks play. And so that was like our first like kind of introduction. They were obviously on the main stage, and we were playing the dirt stage. But it was,
parking lot stage.
We were playing the Kevin Says stage. But it was fun, though, because it was cool to see a different style because we were used to that cool funk drumming and that different type of thing with Infectious Grooves and lots of different stuff. And then a Bad Religion, obviously it was like kind of straightforward punk rock, but he was adding so many cool nuances, so many cool things. So it was cool. Yeah.
And also, because we mentioned Infectious Grooves,
yeah.
Bad Religion, Suicidal Tendencies. I saw the last time I saw you, we've never actually met face to face, but I've seen you play live twice from side stage. Mm-hmm. Once was at Soundwave 2 years ago, when you were filling in for Travis Barker in Blink 182.
Right.
And then also, I believe it was you with Tenacious D at Download in about 2012.
That was me.
That was 2013, whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah. You're making me sound like a real slut over here.
You are a drumming slut.
I am just a whore.
What is wrong with you?
Yeah, just a nasty whore over here.
But yeah, so there's a very long pedigree here of all the stuff that you've done. And so were you looking to make a change from Bad Religion, or were you happy there, or Did Matt home wreck Bad Religion or
yeah, freaking home wrecker
band wrecker?
Why is it just Matt?
Because yeah. You're the Mick Jagger of the band, yeah. Right?
I mean, you know, truth be told, this past year I have been, you know, just reassessing the future of what I want to do, and you know, to be associated with a band like Bad Religion, and you know, I played on 6 records of theirs, so you know, I'm so proud of all the work we've done together. But yeah, I was kind of yearning for something new, a different style possibly, and during that time, that's when I got the call from these guys, and yeah, I, you know, just wanted to pursue something.
Because this is some, you know, some, I mean, obviously there's a lot of different sides to the Avenged Sevenfold coin, but it's very heavy rock, heavy metal drumming in a lot of cases.
Yeah, and, you know, before I discovered punk rock, I was playing metal drumming.
I remember Bad for Good. I actually have that album, Refugee.
Refugee, produced by Steve Vai.
And that was back in like about 92 or so.
Yeah.
And it was the gimmick of the band was you guys were all like kids, like 16 years old or 18 years old or something.
Yeah, it was presented as a child prodigy, man. I mean, our guitar player was, I think, 12.
Thomas McLaughlin.
Thomas McLaughlin.
Is that his real name?
McLaughlin.
Okay.
But because there's a very famous fusion guitar player named
John McLaughlin.
His dad thought it would be wise. I'm sure the manager thought it would be wise to change it to McLaughlin.
Tom McLaughlin. So he was like, he was 12?
He was 12. And Steve I discovered him at Donington, which I think is now Download.
Download, yes.
When he was like 9 years old and his fingers were like half the size of mine. So it was incredible. Yeah.
And I saw
him play at the NAMM show when I was, I think, 10 with my dad. And I said, I want to be in a band with that kid.
Because he was also in the video for The Audience is Listening, one of Steve Vai's tracks.
Yeah.
And he played a young Steve Vai.
That's right.
Yeah. The teacher was yelling at him, Steven, you play guitar all the time or whatever. Yeah. And so you knew him from that.
I knew him from that. Yeah. I think that was my introduction.
And then even as a rock fan, you see him in that. And then here you are in this band with him.
Yeah.
And the singer,
Danny Cooksey,
was a kid who used to be on Different Strokes.
He was, Gary Coleman's brother.
You never thought you'd be talking about this on the show.
This is great.
Yeah. You're probably going to learn a lot about your new drummer here.
Maybe you don't have the gig yet, after all.
Yeah, so Danny was a singer, then our friend Zach played bass, and we were one of the first acts to be signed to Interscope Records.
Was that Steve's label?
No.
Jimmy Iovine?
Jimmy Iovine, gotcha. And Ted Field. So I think it was us and that Rico Suave guy.
Gerardo.
Yeah, we were like the only band signed to Interscope.
I love that. I just bought the other day that album on iTunes.
Yeah.
Because I had to have Rico Suave.
It's timeless. It's
amazing.
A timeless song. Yeah.
Rico Suave.
So yeah, that was my first official.
Did you guys gig at all, or did you?
We opened up for Joe Satriani for 2.5 weeks with a parent per member because we were minors and we legally couldn't tour without chaperones. And then we had a tutor out with us.
Dude, that's crazy.
Yeah, so we only did 2.5 weeks because it cost a fortune to keep us out on the road. And then that was it. It folded after 2 years.
How was it opening for Satriani's crowd as a bunch of 12, 13, 14-year-old kids?
It was predominantly male out there, surprisingly.
No chicks waiting?
No chicks. And if there was any girls, they were the girlfriends of, you know, the guitar players in the audience.
12-year-olds?
Yeah. And they weren't.
They weren't, you know, pedophiles. Jeez.
Yeah, weird.
Dumb chicks.
But yeah, it was very tame. I mean, there were theaters, you know, it was Joe Satriani, so everyone was seated. It wasn't too wild, but we were just stoked to be out there, you know, playing in front of 10,000 people a night, and, you know, it was brand new, you know, for us.
Now, is your brother used to be in Zappa, right?
Chad
Wackerman, famous name.
He worked with Frank for about 10 years.
Man, so you have that in your genes. being a musician?
That was, yeah, I would say Zappa, Van Halen, and Prince were some of my earliest influences. So as far as, you know, the broad spectrum of my drumming influences and bands are concerned, those are the ones that come to mind.
Because I told Matt when you got the gig, it's like, because Gates loves Zappa.
Yeah.
He's a big Zappa guy, you know, that sort of stuff. So, yeah. I mean, you guys have loved
it. And I can tell by his playing that, you know, that influence is
right
there.
So how did this get to this point then, M, where you guys decided to make a drumming change, and how did Brooks's name come into the mix?
Well, to be honest, Brooks's name has always been in the mix. It was one of the names that we were throwing around with, you know, when Jimmy passed away, in terms of who was going to step up for Nightmare. We felt Mike was the right choice, and I still feel that way. You know,
Mike Portnoy
just destroyed it on that record. He was perfect. But mm-hmm. at the time, you know, our good friend and tour manager at the time, Dione, brought up Brooks as well. And you know, at the time, it was like he was busy with Bad Religion. It was also, you know, just the we knew people were going to look at it differently because you're punk, known as a punk drummer at mm-hmm. this point. And so back then the name had been brought up, and then, you know, we made a change in the middle of touring when we brought Aaron in. And Aaron, I mean, I have nothing bad to say about the guy. He's a wonderful person. I just saw him this weekend at a wedding. And it was great to see him. But in terms of just throwing somebody from a completely different generation than your own, with completely different influences and completely different styles of what you like to listen to or this or that, throwing him into the middle of a tour, we were kind of able to get him on board with, you know, the whole touring lifestyle, which is a complete lifestyle change, going from, you know, selling cymbals, which what he was doing.
And what was he, like 21, 22
yeah,
years old?
Young, yeah. Yeah. And then to throw him into this whole thing. And then, you know, it just became increasingly difficult to be on the same page, not only touring, but with writing and with just where we want to take things. And we're just a bunch of guys that are all over the place, and we have so many different influences, and we need somebody that kind of can instantly, you know, they can sit there and say, yeah, I've got that influence too, or I understand why we're going to go here. I can understand why we're doing that. And it just got to the point to where after Mayhem Festival last year, we had, you know, we had just decided to fire on all cylinders the way we want to, we needed to make a change. And, you know, we had our little talk, you know, we all went out to dinner and we said, listen, we can ride this thing out the way it is right now and we'll be fine. But we said, or we can, you know, shake the nest a little bit, and we want to fire on all cylinders again. And we want to be the baddest band on the planet. Mm-hmm. And we want to go out there and just dominate on stage. And I came up with the idea. I said, I really want to talk to Brooks and see if there's any chance that, see where he's at in his life right now. Mm-hmm. If there's any, you know, because at that point, there's no, you don't know. I haven't talked to him, and I wasn't like trying to poach him or whatever.
Sure.
You know, it was just more like,
let's see
what he's up to.
Yeah.
And it just turned out he was going through his thing as well, like where he's just like, yeah, I'm looking around. So what we did was we kind of all got together and we wanted to make sure we didn't, you know, jump into anything too fast. So for us, it was about, can we play the old songs? Let's go have some rehearsals. Can we write together? Let's write together. Let's throw some riffs at them and see, hey, what would you play on this? And can you give us 10 different drum beats around this riff? And it just instantly clicked, and everybody was so excited. And we said, this is what Avenged Sevenfold needs to do to be back to where we want to be.
Well, and I was going to say this before, is that, I mean, obviously losing a guy like Jimmy, the Rev, such a huge part of the band. Just,
yeah.
And not just as a writer, as a performer, as a friend.
Because
you guys are more like, more than most bands, a gang. And I say that in a good way. And I remember this because the first time I met you guys, or not the first time, but you guys all came over to my house together that one time just to hang out and tube or whatever. How rare is it that all five guys in a band, before a show or a day off or whatever it was, hang out together?
It's truly an oddity.
Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't.
So when you guys came over together, and this was after the Rev had passed away, I was like, these guys are legit. This is a very tight-knit group. Because you had Dano with you and a couple of the couple of the dudes. The Tattoo Lad, what's his name? The guy that gave us the Halloween pumpkins?
Grant.
Grant, yeah. Right? I was going to say Graham, but that's another guy. but it seemed to me that when the Rev passed away, obviously you guys are just, it would be so hard to replace him on so many levels and so hard for a new guy to come in.
Yeah.
Mike came in, it gave you what you needed at that point. Then you bring in Aaron as a 20-year-old kid. I'm sure you probably had nothing really in common with him, you know, for the most part.
You're right.
And so Brooks, similar age. And to me, the missing ingredient is you actually were friends with Jimmy and the Rev.
Yes.
And are from this area.
Yeah. Lives right down the street. You know, it's
so that it seems like you would be able to fit in better with the gang than anybody else, you know?
And it's interesting for me because every band that I've been in, I've always been the youngest. And I think I'm now the oldest in Avenged Sevenfold.
But not by far, though. A few years, right?
Yeah, a couple years.
Yeah, a couple years.
Yeah.
I think the fact that we're closer in age and, you know, I'm from Long Beach, they're from Huntington, you know, we share the same musical influences. It's, you know, like Matt said, it clicked. And,
And I like taking it back to that. I like having that, you know, something that I think Avenged Sevenfold got a little bit away from and not in terms of just purely in not an attitude or anything, but I wanted to get back to that Southern California punk vibe that we've always kind of an undertone in our band. You know, when Mike Portnoy came in to play Nightmare, he's like, I've never done this Southern California punk beat you guys keep making me do, like on Danger Line and all these songs, you know. That thing that like it's definitely a style from here. And it's something that obviously it's a common thread we have with Brooks. And it's an influence that if you're not from here and you didn't grow up in it, you're not going to have it. And,
it makes perfect sense.
And though you're not going to write songs that sound like that, it's just there. You know, it's like
if you say I need a NoFX beat here.
Yeah, exactly.
Or even like to another. Like,
so that's an accurate reference to that. To the beat that he's describing is. I mean, it's really derived from the NoFX beat. You know,
or on the other example, from a pop culture standpoint, say Brooks, I need a Scorpions beat here. If you said that to Aaron, he'd go like, "What's the Scorpions? Like, what does that even mean?" For example,
totally.
Whereas you guys were of the same age to talk about, I remember the Terminator or whatever, you're going to know what you guys are all talking about here.
Yeah.
You know, and that I think that's what was your relationship with Jimmy? You said you were friends. Were you good friends? Did you guys drum with each other?
I wouldn't say really good friends, but, you know, we played festivals together. And I mean, we did numerous Warped Tours together. So we just had a mutual respect for each other's drumming. And
what did you think of him as a player?
Amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, his parts are just so innovative. And, you know, with metal drumming, there's definitely parameters for some bands. And I just always loved how he pushed the envelope. And you know, he would just have a different take on what you would think would be a normal metal beat. He would just twist it around and make it his own. And I think that's how he got his signature. And he was just great guy.
Do you think similar to him when you're writing parts for drums? Like, do you, because I know like there's a lot of crazy stuff in Avenged parts, especially on all the albums besides Hail to the King, which you specifically wanted to make it more scaled back, but it seems like now you want to go back to the Avenged sound.
Cool. Yeah, you know, like I get really cautious saying go back because it's going to be completely different.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there'll be, you know, we're getting back to the idea of the last record was a very stripped down sound, and the idea of the next one is not a very stripped down sound, you know, so there are a lot of crazy things going on, but in a lot of it is us trying to make Brooks feel free to try everything, you know, and that's one thing that, you know, a lot of people come into the situation and we've tried our best to say, let's lay down the parts the way they're written and then let's just go crazy with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, let's just
go as far as you can and we'll pull it back if we need to.
Because if we come up, that's what we really loved about Brooks. We didn't want someone that was purely a metal drummer. We want somebody that has all the influences because Jimmy had all the influences.
Right.
He grew up transcribing, you know, the Panteras and the Slayers and, you know, the Paul Bostaffs and the Lombardos and stuff, but at the end of the day, he was actually being taught a completely different style of drumming, and that's what he was incorporating into these types of drums that, you know, you hear it all over our records. And so that's why we really like the idea of not going with somebody that just plays a lot of blistering fast double bass and snare fills.
The typical power metal sound.
We want something that's completely different. So that's like the whole idea, is to have somebody that not only clicks, but that can do all that stuff.
Very creative as well.
Also, Jimmy had a sense of composition. You know, I some of my favorite drummers are also guitar players and songwriters. So, you know, when I hear him play, I can tell he's a songwriter. I could tell, like, he has a sense of melody, a sense of orchestration, and guys like that, to me, stand out more than just a drummer, you know.
Right.
So he had, you know, just the right elements that you know, made Avenged what it is.
Do you write at all?
I do. Yeah, I'm a guitar player as well.
Oh, there you go.
So, yeah.
So that's another side of the coin that you have that you didn't have with Mikey or with Aaron, right?
Yeah. I mean, Brooks, immediately we just started sending each other ideas, and you know, like,
which is, yeah,
it's like, you know, it's, and you just hope that a little nugget turns into a,
yeah,
awesome,
into a gold
song,
mine,
you know? Yeah. And so, you know, that's been really good too, is because I can just send him a text and be like, hey, let's really think outside the box here, and let's try to, you know, just some cool transitions, or just try to do this. And then he'll send us a bunch of riffs that have awesome drums on them, and you sit there and start working like that, you know.
So you'll be writing guitar riffs.
Well, and you find these awesome transitions or riffs that fit into these certain, you know, amazing grooves, and then you kind of, we all rework them together,
because infectious grooves.
Everyone in this band, like, has their fingerprints all over everyone else's stuff, you know. It's like Brian's writing a solo, we're just sitting over his shoulder like, nope, better.
Yeah,
better, you know, like. And so that's one thing that people that really pay attention in our interviews know, but it's kind of weird, because a lot of times bands are just kind of left to their own devices, like, I'm doing my drum tracks, you do your vocals, and
that's
you
right,
do your guitar, and shut up.
Yeah,
you know? And it's not like that with us. It's like we're like hovering over each other.
It,
like,
it
nope,
doesn't.
Nope.
And it doesn't matter who wrote it. It just matters that it's good.
It's got, everyone's got to like sign off.
Yeah.
We're all on the same page here too.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you can't let your ego get the best of you in a situation
right.
like
who
this.
Right. Who cares? Right.
Yeah.
No one cares.
Yeah, so we're all,
if you look at, like,
the same goal.
Like the White Album, like, sometimes Paul plays drums, sometimes George is on bass.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter. Just whoever's can do it right, do it.
Right.
Totally. You know? Who are some of your favorite drummers you mentioned before that you like, guys that can play guitar as well?
Oh, well, obviously Dave Grohl is one that I grew up listening to, and completely changed the way that I hit drums after.
So hard hitting, man.
Yeah, after seeing him on whatever that MTV Music Award show was, where they played Lithium.
And where, like, he threw the bass up in the air and hit him on the head.
Yeah. And but I mean, I always hit hard, but after seeing him, like, okay, that's how I want to hit a drum.
Mm-hmm.
And then guys like Terry Bozzio.
Great player.
Yeah. A lot of Zappa drummers, Vinny Caliuta.
Did you ever hear the Megadeth record that Vinny played drums on?
I have not.
The System Has Failed.
But I need to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was a little disappointed because I was expecting it to be crazier, but I think
it
maybe
was
pretty
tame.
Well, I'm not, not being a drummer, I'm sure there's stuff in there where you're going to go, oh my God, but I was expecting a little bit more Dream Theater type stuff,
but maybe
for Megadeth, Dave wanted it to be a certain way, but yeah, it's a good record. Yeah, System Has Failed, it's called, yeah.
Yeah, just Vinny's one of those. I mean, I wasn't surprised when he played on a Megadeth record, just because he's that drummer that can do anything.
Do everything, yeah.
You know, I'm a huge Dave Lombardo fan. I grew up listening to, you know, Slayer.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you know Charlie Benanti writes most of Anthrax's riffs.
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's a guitar player, drummer as well.
I know Charlie pretty well.
Yeah. So what do you think is, what do you think that the world who's listening right now, do you think they're going to be excited about Brooks? Like, do you think, and the rumor was Joey Jordison or typical metal guy from Trivium or whatever was going to get the gig. And you've gone outside the box and you've got the perfect guy as a result.
Well, I love that I've seen about four or five names constantly.
Who are some of those? Joey Jordison?
Well, and a lot of people thought, you know, they're bringing back Mike, you know.
Oh, yeah, Portnoy,
like,
yeah.
So they have the whole debate of, like, I hope not, or I hope so.
Yeah.
Who was the website that where fans could vote for their.
Oh yeah.
Oh, they had a poll.
There was a poll, and Brooks wasn't even in the poll.
No, but my good friend Josh was, and I voted for Josh. Yeah. And I don't know if he won or not, but I wanted Josh to win.
The thing is, a double swerve. Actually, Josh, come on out. You've actually got the gig. Sorry, Brooks. So, jokes on you.
He got my.
He won the poll.
So you voted for Josh.
Tommy Lee was in the poll.
Tommy Lee.
I feel like he's done with Motley Crue. He's going to play.
Out of the list of drummers, I just thought Josh was the best fit. Out of,
actually, what the selection Josh was. On the, I worked with Josh on the Slash record.
Oh, did you?
He wasn't happy about playing double bass.
Oh.
He wasn't happy about it. He totally nailed it.
Yeah. Well, then he shouldn't have won the poll then. Jeez, duh.
No, he's great, though. He's a funny guy.
Yeah.
And he's obviously a great drummer.
Yeah.
But I really don't know. I honestly could care less because there's one thing that matters, and it's what comes out next, and then how we play on tour. Mm-hmm. And I know that we're going to have those boxes are going to be checked. And that's all that really matters, because right now it's going to be, I'm sure, months of YouTube videos being watched and discussion, and they're right, they're wrong, this is
the dissection,
this is stupid.
Yeah, exactly. Fan analyzation, where every little thing.
All the experts.
And by the way, Shadows has cut his hair, so there you go, guys. There's another scoop for you that you can all debate on for the next 6 months. What?
Yeah.
Yay, boo, you know?
So dumb.
So, and if you want to watch some YouTube stuff, you got to go watch the guitar, was it the Guitar Center?
The Guitar Center Drum Off.
Where you play with Tenacious D.
And Robert Trujillo.
Yeah. Great, great stuff. I saw the Pinball Wizard one about a year ago. I was looking through Tenacious D, and you guys do a Who medley, which is really cool, and you play this wicked solo in the middle of it.
Thank you. Yeah, that's one of my favorite songs to play with those guys live. Too.
How did you get the gig with the D?
It was through Warren Fitzgerald from the Vandals. He played on.
Great guitar player.
Amazing guitar player and amazing man, too.
Yeah, he is.
That's a whole other conversation, Warren Fitzgerald. But anyways, he knew Kyle, and he recommended me to Kyle, and literally 6 years later, Kyle got in touch with me because he remembered the recommendation and said, hey, we're finally going out on tour. We got Pick a Destiny coming out, the movie. And
So it's been that long.
It's been that long, yeah. So almost 10 years ago is when I started playing with them. And it's been an amazing ride.
I mean, what a great band. I mean, first, you know, they're funny and all that stuff, but man, they're a great band. Harmonies, Jack singing, the guitar playing. I love Tenacious D.
Cool.
I do too.
I mean,
I love it too.
As a musician, as a fan, it makes me laugh. But
the
it's
new record's brilliant.
Yeah, it's so good, right?
So good.
Did you play on The Rise of the Phoenix?
I did not.
Okay.
It's hard to replace Dave Grohl when he's in the mix. And
sorry,
I would
that.
Not be offended. You know.
Sorry.
But so he's been playing on the records. But I played. I did play on the song that they won the Grammy for, which was a Ronnie James Dio cover of The Last in Line.
Oh yes, remember this? Remember the whole metal world and the Grammy situation?
Oh yeah.
So if there's any
Brooks is the bad guy.
If there's any
with the flute solo.
If there's any internet hate, it should be because of that. Because you know, I think Slipknot was also up for it.
Mastodon,
and of course we win, and it's not even one of our songs.
But that happens every year, though.
Oh, yeah.
I remember Motorhead won for Enter Sandman.
Okay,
a cover. Anthrax won for TNT, I believe, or maybe they're up. They won for a cover that they did. Neon Knights, maybe something like this.
Oh, yeah.
So if you want to win a Grammy, kids at home, just cover a song.
Just cover a song.
And you have a better chance. Yeah. Don't write your own stuff. Just cover other stuff. How was it rehearsing with those guys? Is there a lot of rehearsal? Is it pretty much a jam type of a thing?
When I joined, Kyle Gass said, Our main goal here is to rehearse as less as possible. So we don't like rehearsing, and it's very loose. I mean, it's more of a hang session, and we barely get through the set. But it's a set we've been playing for since 2006 with the addition of some new songs. So, it's a riot.
Jack is a good guy.
Oh, amazing. I mean, he's so sincere and you know, I mean, it's hard to go to an airport with him without like moms with their kids,
yeah,
you know, running up to him. But I mean, he signs every autograph, takes time to talk to people, and he's just a genuinely nice guy.
I remember at Download, I was watching with Corey Taylor, his side stage, and it was super rainy and muddy, and so Jack was wearing his wellies, his rubber boots, on stage. Like, the most un-rock and roll thing, his rubber boots on. And he's like, well, I'm not going to take them off because I'll just have to walk through the mud later. And so during one of the musical sections, he's marching, and he marches off side stage, and he's fist-pumping everybody that he sees on the side of the stage. And he fist-pumps Corey, and then I met him at Golden Gods. He goes to fist-pump me, and then he's like, hey, big hug. Yeah. Then he continues marching with that look on his face. And it's, you know, it's like so funny just to watch him go as you guys are just laying it down with the giant inflatable cock, Phoenix.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
I just watched the video of that at Rock and Ring.
Rock and Ring, yeah.
As the cock gets inflated. It's great.
We actually had a cock malfunction, I think, in St. Louis where, I mean, it's literally an inch behind the back of my head. And before we go out on stage, the cock inflates, but it wasn't inflating. It was like, you know, at half mass. So
semi-erect.
I get up there and the guy with the pump is trying to, you know, pump the cock up, and I count off the first song, and just all of a sudden I feel this like this wind. I thought someone left the exit door open, and it just hits me right in the head. So I got hit by
the cock.
Cock right in the back of the head. Drummer knocked out by cock.
Yeah.
Well, another thing about Tenacious D I think is funny is when you look up Brooks, the first thing that comes up is you in a Colonel Sanders get up doing a drum solo.
Yeah.
And that's what I can't wait for the fans to. That's the first thing they're going to see is him dressed up with a fake beard and a mustache.
There's going to be a lot of forums of topics with my past. So,
and I also saw you were dressed up like a girl with some other group.
Big Talk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just get it all out. Yeah.
You know, with a name like Brooks, it's a very androgynous.
And also Wackerman.
Wackerman.
He doesn't need a big name.
I mean, it's great. It's a porn name. It's a drummer name. Like, you were born to be a drummer with Wackerman.
Exactly.
You know, you got to whack stuff.
Most people think it's an alias, but it's my biological name.
Brooks Wackerman.
And I just happen to come from a drumming family. Like, everyone in my family plays drums, and our last name is Wackerman.
A long line of Wackermans.
Yeah, so... Yeah, I didn't have to change my name for
that's what I was going to say. You got M Shadows, you got Sinister Gates, you got Johnny Christ.
Right.
You got Zach Evan. Just Wackerman?
You know who the drummer
B.
is.
B. Wackerman?
Yeah, if you're not familiar with me, you just automatically know I'm the drummer.
Or is it going to be like W. Ackerman?
We might be on to something.
M and W.
I'll keep my name, but the spelling.
Yeah, not to be confused with Forrest J. Ackerman, who is in charge of Famous Monster magazine with Kirk Hammett, would love the fact. Avenged Sevenfold. That might get the Metallica tour you're looking at.
Well, actually, yeah. I mean, look at all the... I mean, he's... His boy is in that band.
That's right. Robert Trujillo. Robert, let's talk about this for a bit.
Talk to Lars texts me. He's like, dude, I heard about Brooks. What was it? Trujillo hit you up.
And I told
Lars, and I said, don't say anything. A day later, he's like, Lars told me, don't say anything.
Because I emailed Robert. I said, hey, I need to talk to you. I'm making some career changes this year, and I just want to, you know, keep you abreast on what's happening. And literally that day, he emailed me back, said, hey, Lars said that you're playing with Avenged Sevenfold. So I'm like, I don't have to call you.
Lars hates the fact when guys have good hair. He does.
Right.
Yeah, he was so mad at John Deddy at Soundwave. When you did the Blink 182 thing at Soundwave,
he was playing with Slayer
and Anthrax.
That's right. He was double dipping.
He did double duty because that's when Lombardo quit.
Right.
And Kerry called him like, I know you're going to be in Australia anyways. Can you do both gigs?
Sure.
So they were actually some of the side waves was Anthrax and Slayer. So John would go out with an Anthrax shirt, play the Anthrax set, come off stage, towel off, put on a Slayer shirt, go do the Slayer set.
Yeah.
And Lars was like, who's this guy? He's playing for Anthrax and Slayer. He's right over there. He's tall and he's got better hair than me. Maybe he should just join Metallica too.
I love that evaluation.
Yeah, that's what he judges on.
That's all it takes.
Yeah. So being Infectious Groove's great band, as Matt said earlier.
Thank you.
I love those first two records, and I love actually Groove Family Psycho as well.
Thank you.
And did you guys tour a lot with Infectious?
You know, during that time, Suicidal was so busy.
Mm-hmm.
They were opening for Metallica for, I think, like 3 years.
Were you on that tour too?
I wasn't.
Okay.
So I started playing in Suicidal. I'll get into that after the infectious phase.
Was a Candlebox opening for that tour? I mean,
yes.
That show, they had so many shoes on stage. Yeah.
And who was the first band?
I don't remember.
Fight.
Oh, it's Fight with
Fight.
That. Yeah,
Fight.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah. Fight, Candlebox.
Were you at Suicidal. The Dominguez show? That was the show that I went to.
Yes. Okay. Me and Jimmy went to that.
Yeah.
And I was his there. Dad took us and he took a book and read in the corner.
Is that right?
Oh, he was our chaperone. They're little kids.
Yeah. It was like my first band.
But here's the extra special super bonus point question. Do you know who the guitar player in Fight was at that point in time?
No.
Russ Parrish, a.k.a. Satchel. From Steel Panther.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
His first band was in Fight.
This is like Stump the Trunk.
It, wow. Yeah. I could kill Trunk. That guy pisses me off, man. Stump the Jericho should be more of a thing. If it's a UFO question, he'll get it right. That, Other than that, I got
deep
him.
Deep metal trivia.
It is. There you go. It's deep, deep stuff.
Yeah.
So Suicide, I don't remember where this went.
No, he was an Infectious Grooves you were talking about.
Right.
You were asking me, so the original question was, did I tour a lot with Infectious?
Right.
Not too much because of Suicidal schedule.
Gotcha.
Because Mike Muir and Robert are in Infectious.
Both. Yeah.
Yeah. So when Groove Family Psycho came out, we maybe did like 3 months of touring, and that was it, you know. And then Mike came out with a solo record. We flew to Europe, and his solo record opened up for Infectious, and we were the same band. So we opened up for ourselves. It was very Spinal Tap. But luckily, I was 19 at the time, so you know, I was a young, virile man.
you could play. It's like John Daddy. You put on your Mike Muir solo shirt.
Yeah.
Towel off, put on your Infectious Groove shirt.
So, the touring wasn't too crazy, but... Mm-hmm. You know.
But you were pretty good friends with Robert, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I've been great friends with him. I mean, he was the one that got me into Infectious. Bad for Good was rehearsing at Mates. It's a rehearsal studio in the Valley in California. And he heard me play during a break. And Infectious was looking for a drummer that year. So he introduced himself and we were friends ever since.
How did you feel when he got the Metallica gig?
Oh, I was so excited for him. I couldn't think of a better bass player for that band. And I was actually tracking with Robert during that time when he was going down there auditioning, and he was telling me that there was a whole film crew, but I don't think he knew that they were actually making a movie out of it. So
yeah.
I was getting updates on what was happening. And but yeah, he's the perfect fit. He's one of my favorite musicians.
Similar to this, when Robert got that gig, it's like Brooks getting the gig in Avenged. It's like it's a perfect guy, you know, playing wise, personality wise. Robert's such a sweet guy. Even like plays with his fingers, which Newstead did not do. If you're playing that old Cliff Burton stuff,
yeah,
it was a perfect match.
Yeah,
you know, and I find that it's kind of like the same thing when you said Robert Trio's in Metallica. Of course he is. Brooks Wackerman and Avenged. It's perfect.
Cool.
It's like, you know, it's the same type of vibe. Which is great.
Thank you.
It's not that, for the people in the know, it's not a far stretch.
Yeah.
You know, but I just think it's going to be about introducing, because I see how quick the generations change. You know, how quickly the young kids don't know some of the older guys or some of the older stuff. And that's why this interview is important, because our younger fans need to be, you know, assured that this is going to be good for everybody.
Yes.
It's going to be really good for everybody.
And as a fan of the band... I was a fan of Avenged before we became friends. It's a great mix to me. And if you have any doubts, anybody who's watching, you're thinking, you know, the poll of Josh or Jordy, whatever, Jordy Joseon, go watch some Brooks on YouTube. He's crazy. It's going to blow your mind, man. You guys got a great, great player.
And I got to say, even like the first time we sat in with him, I was actually blown away. Because I had questions about just simple things like double bass or things about, you know, and we've thrown stuff at him that are, the BPMs are way too fast, and like we're gonna slow this down. He plays it anyways. Just like there's a couple of things we threw at you. You're just like, are you kidding me? Like there's no way. Like, and that's never like our number one concern, because we're all about the orchestration of the songs, like the song first, right? But just to know that it's in the bag. Mm-hmm. If you want to do that, we can, you know. And
you know what I love too is that you can tell you and I are metal kids, because we say double bass, where true musos would say double kick.
That's right.
You mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
Like double bass, you mean double kick, right?
I think double kick's in my vernacular.
Yeah, it's like Spinal Tap. There's two bass players on stage.
Talk is Jericho.
Here with Imp Shadows and Avenged Sevenfold's new drummer, Brooks Wackerman. It's a great conversation so far. Brooks, have you been following Avenged's career since the Rev passed away?
Yeah, I mean, I knew Mike was the next choice after his passing, and I thought it was a great match. And then Aaron got into the band, and I think he's a fantastic drummer. Avenged has always been a band that I've respected, and you know, just how eclectic the music is. I mean, yeah, it's in the metal genre, but there's just so much more to the music and twists and turns that, as a musician myself, I can relate to. So, first time I saw him play was on the Warped Tour, I think in 2004, and Joe Escalante, who's actually my lawyer and the bass player of the Vandals, said, "You got to hear this band." And at that time, there's so many bands that kind of sound the same.
Right.
Pretty homogenized. And so I go up there and we're listening to it. And I'm like, okay, this is great. They're playing a 7-minute song on a Warped Tour set, which means they only get 3 songs because it's a half an hour set.
Yeah.
So I was blown away by it and the musicianship and they were just very tight sounding, and I knew it, you know, one day.
Well, see, and that's the thing. I mean, when Avenged came out, because I heard the same thing about Avenged, and I was like, okay, whatever. You know, at this point in time, it's 2005. Guitar solos are dead. You know, it's Good Charlotte type stuff. You see the picture of Avenged. It's like, yeah, they look like Good Charlotte, I'm sure, like whatever. You got to listen to it. And I heard Backcountry on the radio, and then I was like, this is really cool, and bought the record. And like you said, it was State of the World.
Oh, Strength of the World.
Strength of the World. Yeah. It's like 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
And there's solos in it, and you kind of sound like a little bit Sebastian Bach, a little Axl Rose. It's like, these guys are great. Who are these guys? Because no one played that style at that time, especially guys your age.
Yeah.
Halloween influence, I heard that right away.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is great stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, it was a throwback to some great metal influences, but, you know, it's just the mix of everything that they were doing was, I thought, brilliant.
Now, you mentioned how you were attacked by a giant cock on the Tenacious D.
Let's go back to that.
Why
don't we?
Yeah, call back. Avenged Sevenfold, arena rock band, verging on stadium rock band, one of the biggest shows that you're going to see production-wise.
Yes.
Are you ready for this with the pyro and all this sort of stuff?
I'm ready. When I played on the Grammys with Tenacious D, we had pyro behind me, and just feeling that heat was a little nerve-wracking at first, but then, it looks great. It goes with the whole production of what they're doing, and it's tasteful. I mean, you can definitely do it in the wrong places, but you know, from what I've seen, it's.
Were you a metal kid when you were growing up? Did you like Iron Maiden and Metallica, those type of bands?
Yeah, so Scream for Me, Long Beach.
Yeah, that's right. You were there, right? Yeah, that's your neck of the woods.
Yeah,
Scream for Me, Long Beach.
I was too young to go, but there used to be this place called Music Plus that was a famous record store chain.
Record store
and
kids.
And they had every Iron Maiden VHS there. So I my dad would take me there, and you know, that's where I learned Scream for Me, Long Beach. So,
yeah, Scream for Long Beach.
But yeah, Maiden.
Now here's another thing too that you have to think about. Like it's the question: what are you going to wear on stage now?
Nothing. It's either drag or nothing.
See what I mean? Is it the Colonel Sanders outfit? Is it the dress? I mean, what do you?
Cause you know, I'm very diversified in my image. So, I have the Colonel Sanders suit. It's always dry cleaned because
you never know.
You never know when
got it with me in the trunk of your car.
There's still demand for that. So, there'll be wardrobe meetings, obviously. And
do you even think of that sort of stuff?
No.
me being a guy from my era, that's the first thing I always think of. It's like, all right, what's he going to be wearing, and what's the hair going to look like, and what's the? But you guys, you're not like you're wearing like leather pants on stage there. But there's a vibe to it.
Yeah, it's got a And last night, I was telling you, I went and saw Slipknot, and just when a band looks the part and also plays the part, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
It's inspiring, you know, like, and Judas Priest played the night before, and they're not walking out there with white t-shirts and
It's show business.
Right. Yeah, no, and it's good. It's a vibe, you know. There's nothing wrong with that.
And conversely, when AC/DC plays, they're wearing t-shirts and jeans, as they damn well should be, because it's AC/DC. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah, well, they would look a little goofy with, you know.
Yeah, if they're wearing leather pants. Yeah.
Well, when I joined Suicidal, and we did the Warped Tour in 99, and, you know, you're familiar with how they look. I mean, they're built and
gangster,
South
Central.
Yeah, the bandanas and everything. I mean, I looked like I should not have been in that band, and I was the farthest thing from the guy that should be in Suicidal. And I used to show up at these venues with my credentials, and the security wouldn't let me in because he would not believe that I was the drummer of Suicidal. I mean,
get out of here.
I looked like a geek back then. I mean, bands that I've played with, you know, my image has never really matched, you know, the drumming style. But, you know,
whatever.
Do you want to say anything about that? I don't know.
Just wear the Tommy
Lee.
We're going to
take a poll.
I want to ask them, why were you wearing a Colonel Sanders outfit on stage? What band was it with?
That was with Tenacious D.
Okay, well, there
and
you go.
Jack and Kyle came up. You have to see the show for it to be in in context with what we were doing. But basically, in a nutshell, Jack wanted each band member to be a character that died and went to hell for a particular reason. So our bass player was Charlie Chaplin, and the reason he went to hell was because he was gay.
Okay.
Naturally.
Right. Yeah.
I'm Colonel Sanders. The reason I went to hell was because I killed 1 billion chickens.
Okay.
And then the Antichrist was our guitar player, and enough said.
Enough said.
Yeah.
And what was Jack?
So Jack and Kyle were Jack and Kyle. Oh. So that's connected to, you got to see the show to understand. Gotcha. So this is just a piece of.
Now, did they choose that for you? Or did you guys have to come up with something?
He gave me, I think, 4 options, and Colonel Sanders seemed to resonate the best with me.
Right?
So,
I mean,
have you seen any of that footage?
I have not. But okay. First thing I'm doing is going to
do yourself a favor.
Oh, it's great.
Do yourself a favor.
I will. I'm going to check it out right as soon as this is wrapped up. Now, there's another question, a little bit of a muso question.
Sure.
I see your drum set with the D set up. Do you use the same kit when you play with Avenged, or do you need more toys because there's more stuff going on?
Which set have you seen?
It was the Who medley. It was kind of a flat set, a couple toms.
It's grown since then.
Okay.
I mean, when I auditioned with you guys, I had that set, and it was the same set that I use in Bad Religion.
Okay.
Couple toms up, 2 down. So... since then, I've expanded the set. I'm on double kicks.
No.
Yeah. So it's actually been an experiment for me because I haven't played. I mean, I always have a double pedal with me. But
so you had a single bass drum with a double pedal.
Yeah. Right. So whatever band I'm playing with, that's always been in my arsenal. So I now have 2 kicks, and you know, I'm still experimenting with different tom configurations and everything. I think I got it in the ballpark.
You need 2 bass drums too, so you can put W on one bass drum and Ackerman on the other.
Yeah, with that many syllables. Yeah,
you're right. So. The second bass drum is going to be a little crowded with the Ackerman, but the W, you can do like a W with wings on it and stuff like
that.
Yeah. Kind of some flames coming out of it, maybe.
No, I mean, also that makes a statement.
You have to think about, like, even on Nightmare, all the octobon usage and stuff that Portnoy was using, you know.
The what now?
Octobons.
I mean, octobons are what small little Stuart Copeland used in the Police.
I mean, you got to go out there and we got to play it the way it's played, you know.
Of course.
There's a lot of.
Well, that's what I was asking.
City
Evil,
there's a lot of toms, you know, all the way down.
Right.
The rack,
flourishes.
So, yeah. So we got to. We're going to emulate all that stuff, and then also moving forward, you know, we want them to have the biggest arsenal.
All the toys that you want.
All the toys,
right.
You know. It doesn't mean we have to overuse it, but.
Yeah, and it's been fun. Mainly because I haven't played 2 kicks in a while, so it's been fun, you know, creating my own setup and
sure,
and it's been kind of a trial and error.
It's Bad Religion being basically a punk band.
Yeah,
so there's less going on with the drums.
You
right?
did introduce a blast beat though, in one of the Bad Religion.
Sinister
records.
Rouge. I mean, yeah,
there's some.
They accepted the blast beat.
There's some awesome drumming in those those latest Bad Religion albums, especially starting with what was the record with Supersonic on it?
Process of Belief.
Process of Belief. Yeah. I mean, that's when Brooks first got into Bad Religion. That was just unbelievable. It was an awesome record. So
thanks, man. I mean,
now, you mentioned blast beats. Who do you think invented the blast beat?
I think some guy with hair down to his ass that lives in a Scandinavian.
But let me ask
country.
You this: is it possible that Charlie invented the blast beat, Charlie Benanti? If you listen to Spreading the Disease, and you listen to Stormtroopers of Death, the SOD, I wonder if he did. I should ask him that.
What era?
It was or 83.
Okay, the blast possibly.
I think Charlie might have he if he claimed he invented the blast beat. You might have to agree with
this. Is he a self-proclaimed blast?
I don't know. Are you allowed to say that you claimed it yourself? Are you allowed to say you invented it?
You have to claim it for him.
Yeah, I'm claiming it right now. Charlie Benanti invented the blast beat. And hit me up on the Twitter if you guys know anybody pre-Stormtroopers of Death, which was 85, and Spreading Disease 85.
Yeah. Now, that might be a hard one to nail down, but if you might be onto something.
I could be right there.
You are a man of trivia.
That's the worst. So you mentioned one thing earlier. You said, actually, Brooks did. He said when he auditioned for Avenged, did you audition other guys as well?
It wasn't really an audition. You know, it was, I mean, that's probably the right word.
Audition, quote unquote.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. We weren't.
We went out to dinner first and had a great night of conversations and.
Because that's important.
But
too,
obviously, we had to get together, to make sure that everything,
it was,
gelled.
You know, like getting back to that whole thing, it literally, like I said, we felt like we could coast on the lineup that we had, and we had to have the come to Jesus talk. You know, where we sat down and said, "Is that what this has come to? Are we gonna, or are we gonna tear this thing apart from the ground up and just go through every single thing that annoys us about this band, every single thing that we want to change, every single thing that we feel we have to do to get back to being on stage and just having that pure cocky confidence of like, we don't
did you not have that on the last tour?
I don't think that. I just think that things start to wear on you. You know, like you're out there and you're playing these festivals every night. It gets very monotonous and you're doing the same things and you're all buddies, but you know, Jimmy's missing and you're not trying to replace that, but you want to get to a point to where if we were to tear this thing to the bottom floor, how would you rebuild it to just say new band, new mentality, new fire, you know? And that one of the things was, let's give Brooks a call and see what he's doing, you know? And it wasn't like, we're going to start trying guys out and we're really serious about this change. It was kind of like, if Brooks is willing to do this, then that's what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like we were going to, you know, like just start looking for drummers and.
Well, the thing is, I honestly believe that you guys, and I'm sure you'll agree with this, never got over Jimmy and never were able to replace him because you can't.
You can't. No.
You know, you had tried a couple guys out, but it's like, you know, if your wife passed away, God forbid, it'd be hard to just suddenly get a new wife.
Yeah.
Here's my new wife. Yeah. So it took a good 5 years to find the guy that even personally, it's like he fits in already.
And he was kind
met
of
this
little,
guy.
Yeah.
An hour ago and he's already like the nicest guy, you know, like I'm waiting for him for the other shoe to drop, you know, maybe if he drinks or something, maybe he'll turn crazy. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, and I also want to say like, you know, like when people heard that we were, that we had been working with someone for a year, you know, and that was probably not the best choice of words, because everyone sees that as like a negative where we saw it as such a positive, like was that we're not going to make the same mistake. You know, when you guys
announced that you'd been working with Brooks for a year or so,
or we said
while Aaron
somebody,
was
yeah.
still in the band.
Yeah, and the reality was we had actually been off for a whole year. I mean, we had finished Mayhem, and that's when we decided we were going to start, you know, the audition process with Brooks was, let's go to dinner, let's hang out. That's number one. Then it's about, let's get some riffs together. Then it was about, let's play the old set, let's make sure that we can get through all that. And then it was, we had a couple shows in Asia, and then we had a couple shows in, but we were off. And we were basically, and from our point of view, we didn't want to just throw this on Aaron. We wanted to make some more money and let him, you know, have a nice cushion before he left.
Severance package, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, it's like we felt we owed it to him, you know, and it wasn't, and a year ago wasn't the right time to do all this.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's time to gear up again, and it's time to, you know, strap on the boots, and now it's time to do this. And for us, it was about, you know, it was about just feeling each other out, and we wanted to make sure that everybody knew we were making the educated choice this time, not like, oh, he's good for tour. Hopefully he can write with
right.
us. Oh, he writes with us, but he can't tour with us. We played the old, we did everything we had to do to make sure that this was the right fit before we came out and made any, you know, crazy choices. And I thought that was the right thing to do. But when you put that online, of course, it gets completely twisted around.
Yeah. yeah.
Like, what are they doing?
And, right.
And well, fair enough, you know.
Was it hard to let Aaron go?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we, like I said, I still love the kid. He's, it basically came down to, if we were to break this thing all the way down,
mm-hmm.
what do we need to do to get back to where we feel like we sure. want to walk on that Rock in the Range stage and just slay every band.
Yeah. And no, you don't even yeah. think about it.
Not even think about it.
Yeah.
And you've been on tour with us, and you have your own stories. And no, you don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but even you out there with us, you knew it wasn't necessarily
well,
the right.
I think, and I'll tell the story because it's not a bad one. It just shows Aaron was very young and very excited to be there, as he should have been. But we did a Uproar show, whatever it was, with you guys. And there's two stages at Uproar. There's the main stage, and then there's the parking lot stage, whatever, dirt road stage, yeah. whatever you said. And we were on last on the dirt road stage. And then afterwards, you know, I'm walking around. You finish up, you settle up, you get I'm walking over to where you guys are. And I see him in the parking lot with and he's helping pick up tables for like the concessions and stuff. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, well, you know, they need some help. I'm just like, you're the drummer of the headlining band. Get out of here. You are not picking up tables and picking up garbage. Get out of here. And he's like, well, I'm just being, he's super nice, right?
Well, it's endearing. And you tell a story and the fans would be like, oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, but it's like, no, as a rock star, you can't do that. You're the headliner, man.
You can't do that every day because it wears on you.
Yeah.
And then we saw in some shows that he'd be doing that, you know, like in Seattle, for instance, he was just so exhausted that he just was forgetting all the parts.
Oh, that night?
In Seattle, yeah.
Oh, it was Seattle, yeah, White River Amphitheater, yeah.
And so it's one of those things where you're young and you're learning and we're trying to work him through that process because it is endearing. You
sure.
know, he's out there and a lot of fans want to hear that. Oh, he's out there doing this. But you can't live that lifestyle like that. You can't
yeah.
get up at 9 a.m, go hang out with all your friends on the mm-hmm. on the first stage and help tear down their merch and tear down the tables and then
right.
get up at 10 o'clock at night to play the headlining set.
Yeah.
Because if you forget the songs, then
there's a problem.
There's a big problem.
Right.
And so that's what everyone's there for, is to see you play the songs. And so it's just little things like
yeah.
that.
I mean, did you, when you mentioned Brooke's name, was this something that all four of you guys went, oh, absolutely?
I think Zach wanted to make sure, because Zach, to be honest, he loves Brooke's drumming. And at first he was like, you know, I think he wanted to have that dinner first with the band and say, what are we doing here? Like,
right.
Are we really going to just, because we knew making a change like that was not only, it's not the personnel change, it's how the fans are going to react. And we had to talk through that. And we said, yeah, there's probably going to be some negative reactions, not because of Brooks, but because of the announcement.
It's making another change.
Yeah. And I think people still saw Mike as a part of the band, even though he never was.
But they right. still hold as it official as, member,
they
yeah.
still hold it as, you had Mike, then you kicked him out. Mm-hmm. And then, that wasn't the case at all. That's just how people spin it to sell magazines and
right.
and get their clicks.
Headlines, click headlines, yeah.
And so, so the reality is we've been through one drummer, and that's Aaron. Mm. And that was, we've never had to fire anybody in our life, and it was, I hate saying fired, but it was a really hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So Zach just wanted to talk it through. And then basically we had to have one rehearsal, and the rehearsal was like, Zach's like, okay.
Yeah, done.
All right, yep.
What did Johnny Christ say? Just smile a lot, nod his head?
Yeah, he did. I still don't think he knows.
He's still not sure what's going on.
I'll remind him next time I see him.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I'm
your
Brooks.
Drummer.
Yeah.
What? No, seriously, I'm your drummer.
Yeah. Hey, you used to lock up with me. You watch me.
Hey, Matt, you notice that guy on the drums? Does he look different to you?
Oh, whatever.
So that first night, how was it for you to go out for dinner? And you mentioned that you knew the guys, but was like, were you putting on your best?
And it was more of an acquaintance. I mean, prior to that dinner, I mean, yep.
Oh, so you guys never hung out or anything like that?
We never hung out. We would run into each other at, you know, Mahe and at sushi place in Seal Beach. But other than that, I mean, we never really hung out.
Yeah.
We never really, mm-hmm. you know, texted. So, it felt natural. It was, you know, everything we were talking about, I talked to my friends about. I mean, it was just a very natural getting to know you type mm-hmm. of dinner. And they explained to me what their plans are. And like you said, I was looking for a new opportunity. And I was just honored that they were interested in having me be a part of this machine.
Right, right.
So,
because once again, you're coming into the gang of the four guys.
Yeah, yeah.
So you are the new guy. But the thing, what you bring with you, and similar to Mike had as well, but he's got such a, that we mentioned earlier, such a large pedigree that yeah. you command respect just from all the stuff you've done. You know
damn
what I mean?
It.
Damn it. I'm Brooks Wackerman. Damn it.
In fact, the first day he came in, he changed all the tones on Brian's guitars.
Yeah.
He didn't just like the compression I was using on the microphone.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Right. Matt, can you move a little bit to your left, please? I don't like you standing
Marshall
there.
Head in. I said, you were going to use a 1978 modified Marshall, okay?
Or I'm out of here, bitches.
But another thing was that, you know, one of our good friends was one of our, you know, tour managers for us was also Bad Religion's tour manager. And, mm-hmm. you know, we had talked to him, and he's just like, dude, Brooks is the best guy to deal with on tour, the easiest guy to deal with. So all these things were working together, and you know, it was just one of those things where, yeah, like it was great. It was, mm-hmm. it just really finally felt like,
this is it.
And I can't wait till we get out there and people get to watch.
Well, I can't wait too. I can't wait to watch it myself. You know,
talking about, you know, bringing in a new guy. I mean, a lot of this is something that I've gone through in the past with Bad Religion. I mean, Bobby Scherer, their old drummer, was with the band, I think, for almost 10 years. So, you know, like Avenged's following, with Bad Religion has a very rabid mm-hmm. following as well. So it took a lot of getting used to with their fan base with the new guy.
Right.
So, and I brought a double pedal with me, which never was performed in
that's the VR. Antichrist so, for punk music.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So I mean, but after a while, you know, I was accepted, and you know, so yeah, at first it's a little nerve-wracking, but you know, if all the ingredients are there, then
was it hard to tell the Bad Religion guys that you were going to move on?
It was. Yeah. There was no lead up to it. No one knew. Initially, it was shock to everyone. I called every member individually on a day off on tour right before our last show. And there's just a lot of history there. So, but they understood, you know, they get it. The band has been around for 35 years.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, they've gone through this before. And
I'm sure that deep down inside, they're happy for you.
They are. Yeah.
I mean, it's a hell of a gig.
Yeah, and they're lifelong friends.
Yeah, so, which is great.
Couldn't ask.
What about the D? Did you have to tell them you couldn't gig with them anymore?
You know, it's so random with the D. You know, I felt like I didn't have to tell them just because, like, with Jack's movie schedule, you know, maybe I should. Actually, let's call him right now.
Yeah, officially, Jack Brooks is leaving the D. Yeah, exactly. So, just get somebody else to dress up as Colonel Sanders. They'll never know the difference.
Yeah,
their schedule is just so random, though. It's like,
yeah.
I mean, I would just take that at a basis of what's going on with them.
Right.
Know? Yeah.
I don't mind seeing Brooks play with them, you know. I
mean, would you still?
I mean, I personally don't care. I don't know what the logistics would be, but like, I love watching Tenacious D play. And
yeah.
I'd rather see him play with them than someone else.
That's right. You could pull the Chris Adler and just make it a touring with Lamb of God.
I'd love to see our drummer with a huge cock behind his head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you're not going to see that in this band.
It's
trust
like a tour
me.
Box. They're a tour bus.
And it may malfunction and hit me.
Yeah. There you go.
Unconscious.
Final question for you, Brooks. When you were starting to play some of the Avenged songs, was there any of them that were harder to learn than others? I mean, I know
sure.
damn good, but.
No, I mean, I'm still doing my homework on some of these songs. And,
which are some of the more trickier ones?
Beast and the Harlot.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's definitely a
even
drummer
that snare
song.
Feel. Like,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of detail there.
That's always one for everybody. Like when you play it in the set, like everyone's burnt.
The guitar players, everything. Yeah, it's a hard
burnt.
Song.
Everything's burnt.
Yeah.
It's a very hard song.
Like, where do you put that in the set that doesn't completely destroy
you,
it?
You can't start with it.
You can't.
It's pot, like singing wise.
It's like jumping into a, like doing a marathon run.
It's like jumping into a car at 100 miles an hour. Go!
Yeah, totally.
Right, right. Yeah. So, Harlot.
You know, there's some parts on.
Anything off City of Evil?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
What about Little Piece of Heaven?
Sure.
Great tune.
That was one of the songs that we played the first time we got together. So, and that's one of my favorite songs.
Mine too.
Yeah.
It could possibly be my favorite Avenged song. I love that
mine
tune.
Mine too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, I put it on its own little, It's like, yeah. Is it an Avenged song? What is it?
Yeah.
Is it, I love it.
Because that's a Jimmy tune, right?
Yeah.
So that's like the little island of Jimmy right
there.
That's
like full on Jimmy tune. That's it took me convincing him that we had to use it. And mm-hmm. he's just like, really? We're going to put this on an Avenged record? It's like, oh, we have to. This is just, we even played it for the label. The label came, the record was done. We're like, we're going to put this out by itself. It doesn't really fit on the record. And they're like, they listen to it and they're like, how do you make something like that and you don't think it belongs on the record?
Good
point.
You have
to put that on the record.
Yeah, you have to use that.
It's definitely like a standout track.
Cool.
And I think that goes back to also, I mean, just being from Southern California, the Oingo Boingo influence, and like a lot of people probably...
Some Mr. Bungle in there, some Zappa in there. Yep, it's very exactly. California.
Yeah, very California.
Yeah, absolutely.
And cinematic.
Yep.
Too. Yeah. How do you think Jimmy would feel about Brooks being the new member of Avenged?
I think Jimmy would be ecstatic because... like I said, the history. We used to just blast Groove Family Psycho, and it was all about the drum fills. That's what we just loved, the drum fills, you know, mm-hmm. and the bass.
Right,
it was just amazing. So I think he'd be ecstatic.
Yeah. You know? And future plans, now you guys are writing, and when the record's ready, it's ready.
Maybe
you are, maybe you aren't.
We like to stay quiet because I think...
You guys are very good at that.
Well... And it drives people nuts. And
you know, Brooks, check this out. I had two chances to be on the cover of Kerrang. For some reason, they wanted me and you on the cover. And Matt was like, I'm just going to stay low. I'm like, yeah, it's cool. So did you talk to Matt? He doesn't want to do it. What? You talk to him then. The guy from Kerrang calling me to ask you to... why don't you guys follow him?
Yeah.
If he says yes, I'll be there. If not, then why am I caught in the middle? And that happened twice. You guys like to lay low when you're not on tour.
Yeah.
When you have a record coming up, which is smart.
I just think it causes too much... speculation of what's going on, and the reality is everything that people say. I mean, you're looking at this whole drummer thing. They, you know, you bring up 15 names and they're all wrong.
Mm-hmm.
People want to tell us what the next record's going to sound like, and they want to tell you what they're going to do next. You're going to be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So why build yourself up?
And
when we have something to say, we'll say it, and hopefully it's meaningful. And we're not trying to string you along. We just want
the time
to be
is right. You'll know.
It's all about the music. It always comes back to the music, and nowadays. It's all about everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not willing to put my foot into that generational leap yet.
Yeah.
To where it's about what I post on Instagram.
Because you don't have social media.
I
mean, Avenged Sevenfold is, but I don't know if it's a fan account or if it's your guys. I tell you all the time, there's a picture of you. You're like, who posted that? I'm like,
oh, I think it's a fan from Brazil.
Yeah.
And I think all of my friends are on that. They're like, you posted that? I'm like, no. Which I appreciate. Like, that's the other thing is the fans don't realize we... 100% appreciate all that stuff. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. But the reality is we don't like to just string people along with things that don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
The things that matter is when the record comes out and the tour date, and that we're going to blow everything up and we're going to put out a great record. And when we're ready to do that, we'll be there.
Yeah.
So.
And you got a great new drummer, Brooks Wackerman, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, man.
He's your guy. So go Google
Very
him.
Excited.
Go Google him now. See him in the Colonel Sanders outfit.
Indeed.
Congratulations, Brooks.
Thank you so much.
There you have it. Talk is Jericho exclusive. Avenged Sevenfold's new drummer is Brooks Wackerman, and you heard it here exclusively right here on Talk is Jericho. This was actually M. Shadow's idea. He said they want to announce Brooks on my show, and it's brilliant. Whether it was my show or anybody else's show, the fact that it's a live press release, first time ever. There's no interviews about it. There's no statement. You want to know, come to Talk is Jericho, and you'll even get a chance to get to know Brooks a little bit as well. So I thought it was a great idea from my old buddy M, and great choice as well. I know a lot of you guys are thinking about Joey Jordison or Vinnie Paul or Dave Lombardo or Nick Augusto, all these different guys. Brooks Wackerman is the man for this job. And if you haven't seen his stuff, please, like we said, go to YouTube, look up Brooks Wackerman and see how nutty he is. Although we have to find out what his stage wear is going to be, and if he's going to change his name to W. Ackerman. It's going to be great to hear some new Avenged music and great to see them live. And it's going to be great for you guys to come see Fozzy live. We just killed it on the Kiss Cruise. I'm going to talk all about that on Friday's show with the Iron Sheik. But everybody in Europe and the UK, you need to come check us out. Cinderblock Party Tour with Nonpoint and Sumo Psycho. They are supporting us. We start November 13th in Rotterdam. We hit Vienna, Hamburg, Berlin, Cologne, November 20th in France. Love France and Luxembourg. Never been to Luxembourg. Reading, London on November 26th at the Islington Academy. That's going to be a hell of a show. Manchester, Southampton, Birmingham, Newcastle, Nottingham, Sheffield, and Wales. Come on down. Check it out. FozzyRock.com with all the cities, venues, ticket information, and VIP information. Come down. Watch Soundcheck if you want to do a VIP thing. Soundcheck and a little Q&A with Chris Jericho and Fozzy. And yeah, it's going to be great. And also going to be great when I'm hosting the Classic Rock Awards. November 11th in London at the Roundhouse. That's going to be cool. I'll have to put on a show for Jimmy Page and Brian May. Yeah. Tell me I'm not nervous about that. Actually, I'm not nervous. I'm excited. I'm going to kick it. I'm going to kick it, man. I'm going to kick it old school. Yeah, boy. All right. Thanks to you guys for listening. Thanks to Brooks and M for being here today. And thanks to all of you, the Talk is Jericho faithful. You guys who download Talk is Jericho twice a week for free. We're able to do that thanks to our great Talk is Jericho sponsors. I want you to go help me out and support them. DollarShaveClub.com/Jericho for the discount. DraftKings.com. Use the promo code Y2J to get 20% off your first purchase. TrueCar, Uber, and of course, Amazon, the old faithful. Use the Talk is Jericho links whenever you do any online shopping. You know where to find them. Go to podcastone.com, click on the support or show sponsors banner at the top of the page, then hit the Talk is Jericho button. I got Amazon links in the USA, UK, Canada, Every time you use the Talk is Jericho Amazon links, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to the show to help us cover production costs. Won't cost you anything extra, no hidden fees or extra charges. Buy what you want. Help Talk is Jericho out in the process. All right. Thanks again for you guys for being here. Love the show today. It was a lot of fun. Brooks Wackerman and M Shadows. Last week, Amy Bruni, the ghost investigator. Crazy story she had. Kofi Kingston had a great story as well. Dudley Brothers, go check those guys out if you haven't. Jerry Farrar from Entourage. I don't know. Go back and look through the archives. Listen to them all. Listen to all the Kiss ones. Listen to whatever you want. Do what you want. Be the best you can be. Stay hard. Stay hungry. Stay cool. Yeah, boy. And next Friday, actually this Friday, Iron Sheik will be here. And people are going, is this going to be a curse-heavy show? He actually was in a little bit of a mellow mood, the Sheik was, and I actually enjoyed that. It's not crazy, bathering, blathering, babbling, lunatic Iron Sheik. It's actually legendary Iron Sheik talking very pointedly about his career and about his life. So I really enjoyed that show, and I expect you guys to be here listening to it. Iron Sheik. Kiss Cruise description. So much cool stuff coming up on Friday. We'll see you then.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.